Deep within the Geek Cave, there lives a sarcastic woman who jumped the snark years ago. With her cynicism talisman forever upon her neck, she guides you through the cinematic wasteland. It's time for the More Than Monthly Movie Review from the GRD Cinemistress, Carol the Cat.
Hello, faithful listeners. This is the Cinemistress, and I went to the movies quite a lot in 2019. As a matter of fact, I went to the movies far more often than I told you guys about, as you will soon see. This is the Cinemistress's top 10 list of movies for 2019, with some honorary mentions and some notable absences. I realize it's late February when I'm getting this to you, but there were some movies that were technically 2019 movies that I wanted to see in the theater prior to making this list, and it's probably a good thing I did, as one of them did show up on the top 10 list, and one of them shows up in the honorable mentions. A lot of these films I did not review for you, so I will be doing little mini-reviews. I will completely leave out spoilers, however. I won't be doing full good, bad, and ugly reviews because none of the films in my top 10 list have any ugly, and there's actually very little bad there as well. But before I get started on the honorable mentions and the top 10, I wanted to bring up four films that were highly acclaimed and up for multiple awards, well, with one exception, that I did see but are not on my list. First up is Uncut Gems, which notably was not nominated for any Oscars. They just do not like Adam Sandler. I can understand why his performance is praised, but I disliked this movie intensely. I didn't like any of the characters. I guessed the ending 10 minutes into the film and then sat there waiting patiently until the ending I knew was going to happen happened. If you want to watch Adam Sandler hustle his way through 2 hours, this film might be for you. It was not for me. Next up is Marriage Story, which I will admit was well acted by Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, but I did not connect with anybody here. It's just two very wealthy white people trying to get divorced. I've been divorced. It's painful and difficult, but it's not that hard, and good lord, it's a good thing it's not that expensive. So if you want an updated Kramer versus Kramer, this is probably a good movie for you. Next up is The Irishman. I watched all 3.5 hours of The Irishman, and the only thing I could think is that I'd seen this movie before, and better, and it was called Casino. It's not a terrible film. I don't think Martin Scorsese could make a terrible film, but I don't think it broke any new ground, and before you bring up the CGI de-aging, I thought that looked horrible. And you can make Robert De Niro look like a plasticine 37-year-old, but you can't make him move like one. He's 76 years old, and he moves like a 76-year-old man. There was a fight scene early on in The Irishman where I was more worried about Robert De Niro falling than I was about the dude he was supposed to be beating the shit out of. If this were any other director, we would be calling that as bad. But it's Martin Scorsese, and like I said, this isn't a terrible film. I just felt like I had seen it before. And the last film in the notable absences is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This was probably the most entertaining of the notable absences here, but I felt it was Quentin Tarantino's most self-indulgent film. And we're talking Quentin Tarantino. Yes, it has a very good performance by Brad Pitt as the world's most charming wife killer. Yeah, they just kind of gloss over the fact that Cliff very likely killed his wife. But there's just so many scenes of Brad Pitt driving and Brad Pitt doing housework and Brad Pitt being Brad Pitt. Oh, and women's feet. I get it. You have a foot fetish, Quentin? Really? I know it's a running joke, but did I have to see every single actress's filthy feet? It got to be ridiculous. When they introduce the Manson family women, you don't see any of their faces. All you see is their feet. I don't even have a problem with feet, but it starts to get kind of gross after a while. So no, that didn't make my top 10. Although it was slightly entertaining, I just didn't find it that entertaining. And the ending rubbed me the wrong way, really. I know he likes to rewrite history, but this just seemed a bit, I don't know, disrespectful. So those are four movies that got really great reviews that I saw, but came nowhere near my top 10 list. Next up, we get 5 honorable mentions, and I'm not doing these in any sort of order. You can just say they're all number 11 on my list of top films. Now, I did review all but one of these, so I'm going to go through these kind of quickly. First up is Ready or Not, a really fun horror film with a terrific performance by Samara Weaving. It's worth the watch just for that banshee scream at the end. Next up is Shazam, which is DC finally getting something right. This was a delightful film, maybe a little too scary for younger kids, but I enjoyed the hell out of it, and I loved Zachary Levi as the title character. I can't wait to see the next movie in that series. Next up is another DC film, Joker, which I did think was a very good film. Was it 11 Oscar nominations worthy? No, but it didn't win all of those Oscars, to which I am very surprised. It won the two it should have, which was Best Score and Best Actor, because Joaquin Phoenix is the main reason to watch this film. He's terrific, and his performance alone would have put this film in my honorable mentions list. Next, we get Marvel, Avengers Endgame, which was an incredibly satisfying end to this amazing run of movies. I did not think they could make the ending satisfying, but they did. And I cried. And I rewatched it recently, and I cried again. I was very happy with the way the MCU ended this phase of their movie franchises. And lastly, in the honorable mentions, we have a new one, Little Women. Director Greta Gerwig's take on the Louisa May Alcott tale is expertly directed, beautiful to look at, the costumes are amazing, and it's Little Women, so the story is divine. There is, however, one thing that kept this off my top 10 list, and that is the performance of Florence Pugh as Amy. She was perfectly fine as Amy as an adult, but when she's portraying Amy as a teenager, the performance was bad. It was just bad. It was an adult trying to be a little kid, and it really took me out of the movie every time younger Amy was on the screen. It doesn't help that Florence Pugh has a rather deep, raspy voice that sounds nothing like a teen. But the rest of the film is really wonderful, and Saoirse Ronan's performance as Jo is really awesome. She deserved her nomination. There's not a whole lot new here if you've seen most of the adaptations of Little Women, although I will say the after-credit sequence where Jane Eyre shows up and asks Jo Marsh to be a member of her crinoline initiative was a bit unique. I'm joking, that doesn't happen, but I would watch the hell out of that movie. Jane Eyre, Jo Marsh, Elizabeth Bennet, the second Mrs. De Winter, and they never call her by her first name. They always just refer to her as De Winter. They just travel around the globe solving crimes. I would watch the hell out of that. Yeah, we need to make a Crinoline Initiative movie. Of course, that'll never happen. I could get Pride and Prejudice and zombies, but I can't get that. So those were my notable absences and my honorable mentions. Now let's get to the main event, the top 10 list of 2019. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, but Cinemistress, you didn't review 8 of these films. I know. I missed some really great films to review for you, but you're gonna get some mini reviews here, so shut up and listen.
Number 10.
So here's the first of those movies that I didn't review for you, Ad Astra. This one kind of took me by surprise. I went to the movie theater just to see a movie, and Ad Astra was the next thing playing, so I bought a ticket and went and saw it and really loved it. This movie stars Brad Pitt and is basically Heart of Darkness in space. I really was not anticipating liking this film, but I really loved it a lot. I think it's Brad Pitt's best performance of the year. Yes, I do think it's better than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's visually interesting to watch. The special effects are great. And this movie is subtle. It takes its time, and I kind of like those slow burns. It's one of the things that people are complaining about with this movie is that it's slow and too drawn out. I actually enjoyed that. I enjoyed the slow ride to the end. And it's weird to say a movie's subtle when it has a gun battle on the moon, rabid space monkeys, and a knife fight in zero-G. This movie has all those things, yet it is still very subtle. If I have a fault with this movie, it's that the women have virtually nothing to do, but this is basically a centerpiece for Brad Pitt, and I really enjoyed his performance, and his smile at the end of this film was one of the most happy moments of 2019 for me. I just really liked this.
Number 9.
Knives Out. So this one I did review for you, so you can go back and listen to my review. Rian Johnson's murder mystery, Why Done It, is extremely fun, and I loved Daniel Craig. I cannot wait to see the next Benoit Blanc adventure.
Number 8.
This is the other film I reviewed for you, Jordan Peele's Us. While I don't think it's quite as good as Get Out, Us is super creepy and has an amazing performance by Lupita Nyong, who of course was not nominated for anything because you don't nominate women in horror movies. See Toni Collette last year for Hereditary. I called it when I reviewed it.
Number 7.
1917. Sam Mendes's World War I pick is pretty amazing to watch. They disguise it so it looks like it's all one cut, and yes, you can kind of see where they do fake it, but it's still a fun gimmick in an otherwise harrowing movie. This follows two soldiers as they basically run through enemy territory to get a message to British command to stop a planned attack for the next day because it is a trap. So you're following this one mission from start to finish. And I found that very unique and really interesting to watch. Normally you get huge battles in war films, and this just follows two guys on a very small mission. It's centered around a really terrific performance by George MacKay. The camera is on him for almost the entire movie, and he does an excellent job. If there is a bad part of this film, it's that they have three rather big-name British actors doing cameos here, and every time they stopped and met up with that big name, it took me a little tiny bit out of the film. This reminded me of an 80s film called Gallipoli, which also takes place in World War I and has to deal with message runners. It's one of Mel Gibson's first films, and if you can find Gallipoli, I highly recommend it. It's just remember, both of these movies deal with war, and a horrific war, and not everybody comes out of it.
Number 6.
Well, speaking of horrific, Tigers Are Not Afraid. I'm counting this as a 2019 film because it was released in America in 2019. This is a Mexican film. It is in Spanish, so you will have to read subtitles. This is currently streaming exclusively on Shudder. Shudder is a horror movie streaming service that I highly recommend. It's $4.99 a month, and it's well worth it. I don't get any kickback from them. I just watch them a lot. Tigers Are Not Afraid tells the story of Estrella, who is living in a Mexican city that is overrun by drug cartels. And one day at school, they go into lockdown because a gunfight erupts outside. And while they're hiding under their desks, Estrella's teacher gives her three pieces of chalk. And in an effort to calm her, tells her that these three pieces of chalk will grant three wishes. When Estrella goes home, she realizes her mother is missing, and she basically has nowhere to go. Not knowing what to do, Estrella falls in with a group of orphaned boys who are led by Shine. And Shine has stolen a cell phone and a gun from one of the cartel's agents. So this drug cartel is looking for this group of children because there's information on that phone that is very damaging to them. This is a gut-wrenching film that is really sad and very harrowing. And there's some amazing child performances here. I highly recommend this film. Just grab your box of tissues before you sit down. You're gonna need them. If you want to know why there are people clamoring with their children to get across our border from Mexico, this movie shows you a very good reason why. Because they count the deaths from the drug cartel in Mexico, but they don't count how many children are displaced because of those deaths. They just kind of fall through the cracks. Again, that is Tigers Are Not Afraid, and right now it is streaming exclusively on Shudder. Which brings us to
number 5.
Which is also streaming exclusively on Shudder. And that is One Cut of the Dead. Finally, we get a little bit of levity. This film came highly recommended to me by some people that I really trust when it comes to movies. And for the first 30 minutes of this film, all I can think is, why did they recommend this to me? I want to tell you this. If you watch this film, and I highly recommend you do, stay with it. Please stay with it. Because every thought you have during that first 30 minutes will be answered. I don't want to even give you the plot of this film because it would ruin it. Go into this blind. And it is worth the $4.99 for 1 month of Shudder to watch One Cut of the Dead and Tigers Are Not Afraid. That's $5. You get two amazing movies, and maybe you can watch a couple other films before you stop your subscription. But I do not want to tell you any more about One Cut of the Dead other than to say, stick with it past that 30 minutes, because I know what you're going to be thinking, and it's justified.
Number 4.
Here's my artsy-fartsy film of the year, The Lighthouse. The Lighthouse stars Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, and is directed by Robert Eggers, who previously directed The Witch, which I also really enjoyed. And it tells the story of two lighthouse keepers in 19th century New England who slowly go insane when they are stranded at their lighthouse and run out of food and run out of booze and eventually resort to drinking lamp oil mixed with honey. Yeah, you start drinking that, you're gonna see some weird shit. This film is shot in black and white and is filmed in a 1.19:1 aspect ratio, so it doesn't fill the entire movie screen. It's amazing to look at. The black and white cinematography is beautiful. And all of the weather conditions filmed were natural. There's nothing CGI here, and there's nothing man-made here. Robert Eggers basically waited for it to storm and then filmed the scenes. The two performances, and it's basically the only performances in the film, it's just a two-man show here, are amazing. If you're worried about Robert Pattinson playing Batman, watch this film, because he's got a lot of range. And Willem Dafoe, how he was not nominated for any awards is beyond me, because his performance is truly awesome. He speaks in this outrageous accent, but you never quite feel like he's anything but serious, even though he's arguing about how good his lobster is, or farting all the time. Yes, this movie has fart jokes. Lots of fart jokes. But it also has hallucinations of mermaids and ocean gods, and these two guys are really attached to that light in the lighthouse. Let's just say there's quite a bit of body fluid in this film. I will say this, if you had trouble with the language in The Witch, you may want to watch this one with the subtitles on, because Robert Eggers loves his dialects, and sometimes it's kind of difficult to decipher, particularly Willem Dafoe, what the characters are saying. I don't want to give character names here because it's part of the mystery of these two men of who exactly they are. But yeah, I do recommend watching this one with the subtitles on. And from what I understand, Robert Eggers' next film is about Vikings. So hopefully he will just throw subtitles on that one. I can absolutely see where this would not be everyone's cup of tea, but I loved this film. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was incredibly well acted. And although I wasn't scared, it made me feel incredibly uneasy, which is some of my favorite horror, is the movies that make me feel uneasy. I do, however, want to watch a director's commentary on this film, because I want to know how they did the scene with the bird. I need to know that seagull's okay. Number 3. Jojo Rabbit. So, say you're Taika Waititi and you just directed a Marvel movie that was critically acclaimed for being goofy and funny and bringing light and Jeff Goldblum to the Marvel Universe. What do you do next? Well, of course you make a satire about Hitler Youth. An incredibly touching and funny satire about Hitler Youth. At the heart of this movie is Johannes Betzler, aka Jojo, who is an incredibly devout member of the Hitler Youth. He is so devout, in fact, that his imaginary friend is Hitler himself, played expertly by Taika Waititi. Yes, you have a Maori New Zealander playing Adolf. Jojo lives with his mother Rosie, who is not a big fan of Hitler, and has recently lost his older sister to influenza. Jojo's world, where Adolf is amazing and his best friend, comes crashing down when he finds out that his mother is hiding a young Jewish girl in their home. And this film is terrific at showing how the propaganda that Jojo has been exposed to over his young life just slowly disintegrates when he is exposed to new ideas and new people. And this has got some terrific performances. Roman Griffin Davis is amazing as Jojo. 2019 was a terrific year for child actors. But there are also terrific side characters here, too. Scarlett Johansson as Jojo's mother, Rosie, is better here than I thought she was in Marriage Story. And Sam Rockwell as the captain who runs the Hitler Youth camp that Jojo attends is just so hilariously over the whole Nazi Germany thing. It's a terrific performance. And I want to do a special shout out to Archie Yates as Jojo's second best friend after Hitler, Yorkie, who became this character that I had to know was okay through the entire film. He pops up at certain times and basically dumps exposition as to what's happening outside the city. But I was so happy every time he showed up because Yorkie was so adorable. I don't know how Waititi was able to take the Hitler Youth and make it funny, but he did. And I highly recommend Jojo Rabbit. Okay. So now we're up to number 2 and number 1 on the list. And I have to say, these two films switched back and forth so many times that I'm just going to call them both
number 1.
So my first number 1 is Parasite. For once, the Academy Awards gave the award for Best Picture to the Best Picture nominated. I was amazed. Parasite is a South Korean film directed by Bong Joon-ho, who previously directed The Host, which I felt was a really great creature feature, if a bit too long, and Snowpiercer, which I thought was really unique. He also directed this strange ode to vegetarianism called Okja, which I actually really kind of liked. Parasite tells the story of two families in South Korea. One is very wealthy, and one is very not wealthy. Both families consist of mother, father, daughter, and son. And when the son of the Kim family, which is the poor family, is asked to tutor the daughter of the Park family, which is the rich family, he accepts the job and then sees an opportunity to get his entire family hired into this wealthy family's estate. First, he forges an art institute certificate for his sister, and she is hired as the art teacher for the young son of the wealthy family. The daughter then gets the chauffeur fired, and dad is hired on as the chauffeur. And finally, they get the housekeeper fired, and mom is hired on as the housekeeper. Now, the Park family, the rich family, has no idea that these four people that they've hired are actually related. One night, while the Park family are off camping in a very well-to-do camping location, the Kim family basically parties and lives it up in their house while they're gone. And then the old housekeeper comes back because she's left something in the basement. And I'm going to stop there with this plot because what she left in the basement was a complete surprise to me and turned this film around completely. And from that point on, the whole plot of the movie is just this huge boulder just rolling downhill. And you're just following it going, oh my god, what is going to happen next? This is an amazing film. And what is truly amazing about it is, yes, it's telling the story of this wealthy family and this poor family, but you care about both of these families. Neither of these families are bad people, but they're also not good people. They're just people. If this were an American film, the poor family would be martyrs and the rich family would be complete assholes. But here, no, that's not the case. Both of these families are just functional in their own way. And both of them are bad, but both of them are also really good, and you care about everyone involved. There's this beautiful scene where it's raining, and it's shot so beautifully from inside this wealthy family's mansion, and the mother and father are cuddled on the couch, and they're just going on about how beautiful the rain is. Meanwhile, the Kim family, the poor family, is running for their apartment because they know their apartment is below street level and is now being flooded with the rain. So the rain means completely different things to these people. This is a wonderful film. It's beautifully acted. It's beautifully shot. Get over your fear of reading subtitles and see this because it's really great. It truly deserved to be Best Picture this year. So there. And that is because my other number one was not nominated for Best Picture. My other number one is Midsommar. Ari Aster, who directed Hereditary, my second favorite film of last year, directed this wonderful film, which stars Florence Pugh and Jack Rayner as Danny and Christian, a couple who should definitely not be a couple. Christian fully intends to break up with Danny and run off to Sweden with a group of his male friends when something incredibly tragic happens to Danny. It's one of the most horrifically shot sequences of last year, and it happens completely before the title card. When this tragedy strikes, Christian is reluctant to break up with Danny and add more pain to her. So he instead invites her to go to Sweden with him and his friends. Now they're going to Sweden on the advice of Christian's friend Pele, who comes from the commune named Harga in Sweden, and he is bringing them to their yearly Midsommar Festival. Now Pele tells them that while they have an annual Midsommar Festival, this particular version of the festival only happens once every 90 years. So this is kind of a very special event. Once the group arrives at Harga, they immediately take hallucinogens, and they find out that some of the cultural traditions of the Harga are pretty damn horrific. This movie has been called a 2-hour breakup film, and I can see where people would say that because the characters of Danny and Christian, as I said, they should not be a couple. They're just toxic to each other. Christian is a bit of an asshole, and he has absolutely no ability to formulate a thought of his own. And Danny is incredibly passive-aggressive. And both of these characters just don't seem to know how to handle this situation. Christian is terrible at handling grief, and he doesn't want to come across as a complete 100% dick, which is why he stays with Danny. Danny has an inability to show her emotions, and she's clinging to this relationship that is very obviously not working, and she knows it's not working. There's this wonderful scene toward the end of the film where, once again, something bad happens to Danny, and she starts to cry. And normally she hides herself when she cries. She hides in a bathroom. She hides in another room. She doesn't cry in front of people, but the women of the village won't leave her alone. They follow her and they cry with her. They're almost mimicking her cry, but it's not like they're making fun of her. They're just showing her that it's okay to cry. And she finally just breaks down. And I gotta say, Ari Aster has this unnatural ability of filming grief and making it gut punch you. Florence Pugh as Danny is really amazing in this film, but it's a horror film, so of course they couldn't nominate her for a horror film. So in my view, they threw her the nomination for Little Women, where she was the worst thing, instead of giving her a well-deserved nomination for this film. This is one of the few horror films that is bright and sunny almost the entire time. This commune's festival takes place during the midnight sun, so there's really no nighttime here. It only gets to be a dusky, kind of twilightish look, but most of the action here takes place in bright daylight. And it takes place to a bunch of people who are regularly drugged. The inhabitants of this commune are mixing who knows what with the food. Well, we know what they're mixing with Christians' food, but we don't know everything that they're putting into the food and drinks here. So you have a bunch of people who are culturally out of their element and hallucinating on top of that. It makes for an incredible film. This film also has one of the most uncomfortable and unsexy sex scenes ever put to film. It's cringeworthy. I love both Parasite and Midsommar. For the longest time, Parasite was number one and Midsommar was number two, and then I saw Midsommar again and they switched places. So now I'm just going to say, no, both of these films are tied for number one. They're both excellent. I wish Midsommar had gotten some award love, but I'm glad that Parasite got the love that it got. And it's about time that Americans realize that, yeah, other countries can make really, really great films too. And that is it. That is my top 10 list of 2019. I'm not going to do a worst of 2019 because I don't want to remember those movies. I want to remember the good ones. Do you agree? Probably not. Do you disagree? Probably. If you see me at a con, we can discuss any of these films. I'm always up for a drink and a discussion about film. This is the Cinemistress signing off, and I'll see you at the movies.
GRD is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 United States License. Come check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and hit up our website at geekradiodaily.com. Find more of Carol the Cat at guardiansofthegeekery.com and purplehairedpixie.com.